Station, we are Quantum Leap Radio.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
Tis the season. The cool beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch tells us it's 5 p.m. Thursday, just before Christmas time, and it's time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and it's found only on KPFT 90.1, Houston's community station. I'm Hank Rubicek, producer and tonight's host, and alongside the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on storytellers whose stories take us on journeys through windows of their souls before returning us safely to the present. You know, Aesop's fables are filled with lessons to guide us: fairness, integrity, persistence, generosity. Slow and steady win the race. But what about our stories? If you believe we're born a blank page, each page recording an episode in our lives, then it makes sense that investigating the significance of those incidents might give us a better understanding about who we are. Every speck in time isn't exactly earth-shattering, but even the most unprofound micro moment can unpack a memory so lasting that it defines us and makes us better. Storytellers need guts and introspection to learn from their life narratives, and only then can they comfortably permit themselves to deliver their simple tales, snapshots illuminated in the dark room of their memories and delivered so they resonate with us all. I ambushed a couple of tellers for today's show who are about to serve up a few focused glimpses of their lives, situations that resonate with staggering ease. It was easy to round them up, too, because they are students in my storytelling class at University of Houston downtown. Greenhorns in the world of storytelling, but their stories touch us all. Let's start with a couple of very different love stories. With these differences come unique learning outcomes as well. Leah Alonzo is a senior communication studies major with an emphasis in public relations. Leah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. I'm glad that you are here along with the rest of the gang, Leah, how does storytelling, I know this is a hard question to answer in a few moments, but how does storytelling play a role in public relations?
Well, storytelling is actually quite important for any kind of public communication. It's a natural human way of communicating with each other that's really easy for people to understand, and is also incredibly enjoyable. Which can make reaching your audiences easy and really effective.
It really is. And, you know, public relations, when I think about public relations in particular, and I've mentioned this in class and to a lot of people who are interested in communication, a lot of it has to do with branding. You know, branding is coming up with a name or a symbol that identifies a seller's good or services as distinct from those of others. So, for example, Apple, Google, Coca-Cola, Amazon, you know, those heartrending stories from the ASPCA and St. Jude's Hospital, for example, are all illustrations of sound public relations done through storytelling. So yeah, storytelling and public relations are inextricably related, no question about it. Your story is a pure love story, Leah. In fact, it has a few Cinderella components as well. Tell us your story.
All right. Love is often something that must be grown into. Usually it'll take months or even years sometimes to realize that you have feelings for someone. But for me, love snuck up on me. on a cold winter's night, accompanied with a flat tire. Back in the year of 2016, in one of the coldest Decembers San Antonio had ever seen, I met a great man named Trevor. When we met, we had a drink and we laughed, but this was not the moment I fell for him. No, that came 3 days later, on a Monday night of all things. I was driving home from teaching dance for hours in a not so nice neighborhood. As I'm pulling away from the studio, I can hear a thunk, thunk, thunk. Oh crap, I thought, another flat tire. After ironically pulling into the parking lot of a closed Discount Tire, I, of course, did what any other person would do in that situation. I called roadside assistance. When I got a hold of roadside assistance, they then informed me I would have to wait almost 2 hours for assistance that night in the cold and in the bad part of town. I proclaimed my frustration to Trevor as I had been texting him nonstop since I met him a couple days before. He then did something that would forever surprise me, even though looking back on it, I should have known what he would do in the situation. He offered to come and change my tire for me. At first, I objected because I didn't want to impose on this Monday night. He was a very busy engineering student at UTSA in the heat of finals. However, he persisted. And 20 minutes later, he showed up. At this point, it was close to 11 p.m. and freezing. This man, who I had only known all of 3 days, lay down on the ground in the cold and changed my tire for me. As he was finishing up, I knew in that moment Trevor was the one for me. No one, and I mean no one, has ever shown me so much kindness, and I knew I was very much in love. Now, 5 years later, we are still going strong, and that feeling and kindness that sparked that love has never gone away.
Never gone away, right? And it, mm-hmm. You think it ever will? That's a tough question, right? It is so hard.
I hope not.
Why would it? Why would it, right? You know, this kind of a story, I was talking about it having some Cinderella components. You think it does, or you think I'm just kind of reading into that? What kind of Cinderella components? What would be your glass slipper?
I guess a flat tire is my glass slipper.
There you go. You're absolutely right. We're on the same proverbial page. You know, every story, Leah, has a number of lessons, and I know that there are a lot of them to this one, even simple ones, but really romantic ones. But what's the single most important message that listeners should take from this beautiful story?
I think the single most important message would be, you know, it pays to be kind, and going out of your way to help people. Yeah. Can lead to magical things.
So. Yeah, well, that's very cool. And it's so season appropriate, isn't it? I started the show with this season, and it really is the season. I don't mean to be hokey or really kind of, too much of a traditionalist here, but kindness really is the greatest gift of all. You know, I tell people all the time, how about smiling? It's only a curve, right? That's all it is. We can do that, and it works really wonders. Senior communication major in the media tracks, Debbie Silverman, does stand-up in her busy schedule. That's really interesting and unique. What inspired that, Debbie?
I got into stand-up when I first moved back to Houston, and I was in a strange transitional phase, and I really needed an outlet to describe what I was going through. Yeah. And I found humor to be a good outlet.
Where are you from originally? Where'd you move from?
I had moved back to Houston from Thailand.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. That is a big, big transition.
Wow. It was very life-altering.
Yeah, I wish we had more time to talk about stand-up. I tried it once at the comedy club here in Houston many years ago. And let's just say it's really great that I kept my day job. The only reason I got a laugh at all is because I went last and everybody was drunk. And of course, you could do anything and people would laugh at that point, right?
That's true. Alcohol does help humor.
Oh my God. It's pathetic. Yeah, now Leah's story contains some chivalry, but whatever chivalry existed in your story kind of plummeted into a sort of sham. Tell us your unique story.
They say love is blind. In my case, it was blind and deaf. All I heard were the sweet, sensual words he spoke to me. And all I saw was the man he had been, was the man I had been waiting for. Nothing else existed. I was addicted. I craved his love and attention, although I could only truly get it when he was sporadically in town. But I knew that. When I signed up for this relationship 3 months prior, it had been on the contingency that he lived out of town. He traveled to Houston for work. I had to cherish the small amount of time I had with him. On this particular night, he picked me up in an Uber. It was upgraded to an Escalade. He wasn't the type to ride in just any Uber. He was sitting inside in his work clothes, jeans and a button-down shirt, with a vest that was decorated with his company logo. I wanted to rip his clothes off then and there. That's what he did to me. I couldn't resist. I was addicted. We had just sat down at the sushi restaurant. He was sat across from me when he asked, "Should I start now or should I wait until after dinner?" I had been asking him for months to tell me what he kept unspoken. I wanted to know the details of his life that he kept secret from me. I knew he had kids. He had told me that much. We had FaceTimed before while he was at home, and he had to disclose that much. I figured the other part was something to do with a nasty divorce. That's what I told myself, at least. I told him, "You should start now." So he began with two words: "I'm married." My heart stopped. I was no longer deaf. I couldn't be. He was sat across from me, his stupid, beautiful eyes looking at me, while his stupid, beautiful mouth was telling me the truth. I felt a pain I had never felt before, a crushing pain in my body. That pain propelled me up and towards the bathroom, where I cried and tried to catch my breath, while trying to comprehend what this new knowledge meant. I had had concerns of him being with other women while he was away. Turns out I was the other woman, and who knew how many other me's there were to him. I went back to the table and he genuinely looked pained. His eyes were full and his body was contorted in a way that showed weakness. He didn't like to show weakness. He continued on with his confession. He said they slept in separate bedrooms and that they hadn't been happy in years and that they were only in it for the kids. I sat silently across from him, listening. Words wouldn't come to me. Finally, I told him I needed to go, and he got up with me. He insisted on sharing an Uber. We sat in silence that whole ride. I still remember the sound of the air conditioning blowing through the car. When we arrived, I was panicked. If he left, if he stayed in that Uber and went back to his hotel, then what? Is it over? It couldn't be over. I invited him up to my apartment. I was addicted.
Yeah, that is, yeah, the AC blowing in the car. Yeah, that's pretty silent. This is a, just a person who's just simply not deserving of this incredibly wonderful romantic description that you provide. My God, his work logo, what did it say? Liars are us? Is that what the, was that the work logo? Yeah.
It should have been.
Yeah, my God. Well, how do you feel about that now as the story unfolds?
I feel like I learned a lot from this relationship, and I feel grateful that I'm in a place now where I can share this story, and I hope other people relate to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, deception does sneak into all of our lives at one time or another, I guess. What's that one lesson that you garnered from this episode?
I learned the difference between love and addiction.
Wow. Okay. So addiction is a pretty prevalent substitute for love. In other words, we really do get them confused.
Yeah, it happens very quickly.
You know, and that leads to this quote that I remember. I forget who said it. It was one of those anonymous quotes. I think it read, "It wasn't your fault. It was mine for believing every word you said." Right? That kind of fits. Beautiful story. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm sorry you experienced it, but boy, that was well told. And it's important for us to listen to it. So we have Leah and we have Debbie. And they've got two different kinds of love stories. Both learn quite a bit from them. You know, it's not necessarily obvious that we learn from all of our stories. None of us go into a situation where we say, gee, I'm experiencing life. I better learn from it. It doesn't work that way. That's why kids are so successful learning from the fables that carry with it those parables, those Aesop's fables that I mentioned earlier in the program. But with our human stories, sometimes we don't learn from them. And when we don't, well, it's an adage, a cliche to say we make the same mistakes again, but it's really a lot more than that. It's the kind of wisdom that we gain, that we possess over a period of time. Avante Lewis is another senior communication studies major. Avante, I know that you had mentioned you were surprised by the storytelling class. I guess that you thought it was going to be something else, or maybe it was better than you thought. It's a loaded question because obviously I'm your professor and I'm asking you this question. But what did you learn that helped you most in telling stories, something you didn't expect?
Definitely a loaded question, but I would say the most important thing that I learned is that there's a difference between knowing your story and owning your story.
Okay.
When your story is owned, you can tell it with much more confidence.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a great segue into the story that you're about to tell, because your story and the one that Anai is going to tell in just a little while, all of your stories require an element of courage, but there are some that reveal more, some that are a little more disclosing. And by disclosure, I'm talking about allowing authenticity to enter our relationships with our listeners. And I think that your story and Anai's story a little bit later on does that well. Blake's, Debbie's, and Leah's does it as well, but on a different kind of level, but all of them have that in common. We can label your story a love story too. Why don't you tell it to us?
It's often in the stillness of night and in that quiet place of the mind where you find your answers. At least it was in this place for me, where I decided to take the swim and attract my Nemo. I've been contemplating this ever since I heard about it a few weeks ago, but I did it. I signed up and oh, did I feel like a fish out of water. I wrote the profile of a holy woman in hopes of deterring those that were not for me or of me. Yet there I was, deep in the midst of this dark sea, trying not to become someone's unicorn. A week had passed, and the 100+ messages sitting in my inbox were filled with nothing but people who wished to devour the light of me, in which I've spent so long cultivating. Needless to say, I was definitely swimming to another pond because this one proved to be as toxic as the water in Flint. With a few clicks on my profile, I was hovering over the cancel my account button. I'm so over this, I thought. And in that moment, a match and a message came through simultaneously. What the hell, I thought. I tapped on my inbox icon. I scrolled to read the message. And oh boy, this message held the energy of worlds colliding, containing words of divinity, humor, and charm all rolled into one. Definitely different from the previous requests I've received. This one shook me on a soul level. I immediately tapped her profile to investigate her bio. Hit me up. Okay. a lady of few words, I thought. I scrolled through her profile and her photos for about 30 minutes before my brain yelled, "Say something." And with a deep breath and the same butterflies I have 5 years later, I typed, "Hello, Nemo."
Wow. Okay. Now, this story is beautiful and very unique and colorful because it's more poetic, right? What prompted you to take the poetic tone? I know I've asked you that before, but you took really sort of less of a prosaic tone and more of a poetic one. There are a lot of symbols and metaphors and motifs in your story.
I think that's the essence of our love story. Our love story feels that way to me. So that's how it was expressed.
Yeah. No, but are you saying that it feels poetic?
Yes. Okay. It feels.
So. Yeah.
It feels like it's full of divinity, a holy thing that was put together.
Right. Yeah, I find it fascinating because love stories trigger. Inspire poetry, right?
Yes.
That's not a very profound thought, but it is, and I think that's where you're coming from. I remember once, I'm not much of a poet, but I remember writing to some girl when I was in college, and of course it didn't work, but I tried. I said something like, "We follow each other to a place we'd never been before," or some other goofy thing, I don't know. Maybe I was high. I don't know what I was, but all I know is that I tried the poetic tone, and she said, "Oh my God, this is so wonderful! Can I share it with my boyfriend or something like that?" Yeah, it just kind of worked against me. That's all I know. But that is a beautiful, beautiful story. Luck, timing, faith, signaled by divinity. The word divinity. The story had it all. But what was your most important takeaway? Your most important takeaway.
Not to sound too cliche, but that moving outside of your comfort zone and really trusting your heart can literally change your life.
Why is it that you didn't trust? Why didn't you trust your heart before?
Can you past relationships. Past relationships, when you go through different things and you concentrate on, like my heart led me to this. So when you keep hitting a brick wall, you're like, okay, maybe I shouldn't trust my heart as much as I should before. I did before, but opening up and really taking another chance on love really did change my life.
Yeah, Blake, I wanted to ask you something. You might want to unmute yourself. I wanted to ask, what do you think of Avante's story?
Honestly, it kind of reminds me kind of my mom's story. It's just her finding new love with my stepdad and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. And just like, it's a really heartwarming and like deep story. And I just really just like how she just portrayed everything, how poetic it was and all that.
Yeah. Did your dad find love online? Did he find a love online? Is that the whole thing?
Kind of.
Hey, a lot of people do. Don't worry about it, man. It's a great, nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Anai, what do you think? What are your impressions of Avante's story? You might want to unmute yourself.
Honestly, I love stories. And this is what
it's a love story. Yeah. You were smiling a lot when you were listening to it. I was just wondering what came to mind, what was unfolding in your own mind when you were listening to that.
It just made me really happy. I don't know.
Well, they're supposed to make you feel happy, man. They're supposed to make you feel happy. We talk about the meaning of these stories, and I don't want to have to read into too much. Our stories, they're not like Moby Dick. What does Ahab mean? That's not the suggestion of these stories. Our stories are natural manifestations of how we live. And as we live, we learn things. But the problem is that many of us do not. We simply don't. And we don't realize that our stories speak to us. And when we tell our stories, we use our experiences as an avenue to use in a story and speak to others. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I think that these stories really do work on so many different levels. This is Hank Rubicek, and you are enjoying my guest storytellers, Blake McAdoo, Avante Lewis, Anai Osorio, Debbie Silberman, and Leah Alonzo, on So What's Your Story, only on Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. You know, 'tis the season to buy the idea that telling stories about our lives is often the best gift of all. Great stories, so engaging that an image of a crackling fire during the Christmas season can't exist without them. Everyone is a natural storyteller, but if you need encouragement, Houston is a great place to be. Our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is a terrific place to learn about the art of telling. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. The next swap is coming up next week, December 28th. Visit their website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for the Zoom link to all of our swaps and for information about upcoming events. And while you're there, you might consider becoming a member. We can't talk price on a Pacifica station, but the change you find under the seats in your car while you're vacuuming it will probably be enough to cover membership for the year. Also, enjoy past So What's Your Story programs, every show since 2008, listed on the menu under radio program. Visit us on So What's Your Story at facebook.com/So What's Your Story and let us know if you have guests that we ought to consider, or text me at 832-277-1581. That's 832-277-1581. Another way to crank up your storytelling skills is by joining the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. Also, our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live is back in full gear the second Tuesday of the month, where you will enjoy both dazzling and moving narratives, some funny, some sad, but all poignant, and meet some of the nicest people around. Now, Blake McAdoo is a senior in mass communication. Blake, what are your plans after graduating, my friend?
Immediately after graduation, on the 28th of December, I'll be doing an internship with C3 Sports Management and the NFL. So,
wow. So you're graduating in a matter of days. And what am I talking about? When this is aired, you would have graduated today. Congratulations. Hey, what a great way to celebrate. Well, a sports announcer, huh? Do you have an inspiration? Do you have a role model?
Honestly, in terms of sports announcing and management, not necessarily. I've always kind of wanted to make my own way and do things a little bit differently. So,
how differently do you want to do it?
I know everybody and all sports agents and managers focused on the mainstream athletes. So, Of course, the Odell Beckhams, the CeeDee Lambs, you know, things of that sort. I want to focus on the HBCU athletes and then try to get them exposure and get their names out there because they don't get as much exposure. And I just really want to help that and boost that.
I love that. And I appreciate that. That's where I was kind of thinking when I was asking you that question. Yeah, Odell Beckham really pisses me off. I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. I know that may sound weird because they never win, but they are now, maybe. What do you mean? Where does that come from? I'm from Cleveland, Ohio.
I can understand.
I've lived here for 40 years. So I am a Texans fan. I'm a Houstonian, but everybody's got to be born from someplace, right? And if you're born from Cleveland, you are a Browns fan because those fans can't be beat. I'm sorry. I don't care what you say. So as soon as Odell Beckham joined the Browns, I said, there's no way this guy is going to last because he's Hollywood. Cleveland is blue collar. You know what I mean? The people go to the stadium, 42 below zero, drinking a beer, wearing a hoodie and a pair of gloves. They don't want to see this guy. He doesn't fit. So I'm glad he's gone. And I'm glad you agree. That's why I'm passionate. And I don't care. But you know what? You have got a great story coming up, right? This story is, let's just say it reminds me a lot of Friday Night Lights. When I hear your story, and it's a good movie and decent TV series, but you really make it come to life with this story. Tell it to us.
All right. Friday Night Lights, Texas High School Football Playoffs. a time of the year that is highly anticipated by Texans all year, especially for his Foster Falcons. We were 10-0 going into the playoffs with high expectations from Vibe Magazine to go 16-0 and win the championship. With this being said, it felt as if the entire world's weight was on our shoulders, but especially mine. This is going to be my first game as our starting inside receiver. We usually ran a three-man receiver set, which gave us another lineman. But for the playoffs, we decided to show a new formation with four receivers, making me the starter. I never before felt nervous or had butterflies before and even during the game, but today was completely different. As I sat in our locker room, all I could hear was the slow pace of my heart beating, pounding loudly in my ears. A feeling I had hardly ever felt in all my years of playing football. Trying to drown out the noise, I was consistently going over my playbook in my head, trying to make sure I was on top of all my calls and plays, even though I already knew them like the back of my hand. Anything that canceled out the drumming noise of my heart. Before I knew it, all I could hear was, "Let's go, baby, it's time to go, it's time to get fired up." Then a huge roar from my teammates. It was time. As we walked to the tunnel, everything just got silent. I could hear nothing out of the tunnel, going through the coin toss, and even through the Pledge of Allegiance. There was nothing but a cold, eerie silence as if I had went deaf. We had won the coin toss, giving the options to choose the ball or give the ball in the second half. So we chose to give it in the ball in the second half to get it later on. Once we got the opening kickoff going, the game started, and I finally remember a game of my hearing back slowly. The crowd was going crazy. My teammates were screaming and chanting for our teammates and coaches calling out directions. I started to walk down the sideline towards our training staff to get my wrist taped up one more time before I knew it, our defense had made a huge stop on fourth down, and our offense was up to shine. The time I had been waiting for all year, all 4 years, had finally arrived. I immediately threw my helmet on and dashed onto the field and into the huddle. At this point, I locked in and all my nerves and butterflies had finally calmed down. To help ease our nerves, our offensive coordinator called out a quick pass play to get our energy going. With that in mind, our coach called out Aggies, a quick 10-yard stop route for all receivers. Usually nothing big ever happens through this play, but today I was determined to make any play a big one. The ball was snapped and I took off on my route. As I got to the top of my route and turned around, the ball was already in my face. I quickly snatched out of the air and turned upfield. Once after the other, my receivers came and made key blocks for me, giving me nothing but green grass in front of me. Knowing I had elite speed, I wasted no time. I ran as hard as I could, using all gas in me at the time. All I could hear was my teammates going crazy. I looked up at the Jumbotron and I saw I had left everyone in the dust. And at that very moment, I knew making me a starter was no mistake.
Yeah, I love this story. This is great, Blake. You know, what makes your story unique is that with all the other stories, Avante's and Anais, eventually Leah's, Debbie's, theirs have something to do with dialogue. That, you know, there's some other people involved, sometimes good, sometimes not so good. But with you, it's all about you, right? I mean, you're there, you're alone, you're talking to yourself. And of course, as one says, when you talk to yourself, you'll never lose an argument, and that's a good thing. But in your case, you really had a lot of that internal reflection going on, that introspection. What did you tell yourself that inspired you most? I know there are a lot of things going on in your mind, but what inspired you most?
Oh yeah, most definitely. I can definitely say, just growing up, the things I've been through, this is something my grandmother told me when I was younger. And
what did she tell you? I wanted to stop you. What did your grandmother tell you?
She always told me to remember telling myself that consistency is key, and that regardless of what people have told me or tell me in my life, what I know for sure is what always will be. And that if I keep working hard, that the brightness that will shine in my future will eventually open up.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, grandparents are so inspirational. I know that I've told many stories about my grandparents on this show over the years. And my grandfather, who was a man of very few words, said to me, "Take my advice." And that is, don't ever take anybody's advice. That's what he told me. which was essentially what your grandmother said. They would have been best friends, because we just don't really want to listen to people that often. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't heed what they said. Don't misunderstand me. Doesn't mean that we ignore what our elders say. It means that sometimes our instinct, that non-rational knowing, becomes far more prevalent, far more powerful, right? So what's the one thing that you learned that you'll take with you throughout your entire life?
Definitely to never doubt myself and to keep my chin up, work hard, and always aim to strive for greatness.
Always strive to aim for greatness. And you know, excellence and perfection are different, aren't they? I mean, we want to strive for excellence, not perfection. Great. Excellent. Well, senior communication major, Ana E. Oroso, mentioned in class that you couldn't imagine what a class in storytelling could offer you. Remember that one? Like, what in the world am I doing taking the storytelling class? But I guess you changed your mind. That's what you told me, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, well, good. Well, tell the entire world why you changed your mind and why taking a class with me was the single most magical time of your life.
So yeah, when I first heard about the class, I remember I was like, what the hell? What's the importance? Like, we all tell stories. It's not too much thought in that. But throughout the semester, as we learned about the importance of telling stories and why we tell stories and how we tell stories, I realized that there's so much deliberation and thought and effort that you have to put in to tell a good story.
Yeah.
And also having to, you know, tell a story definitely changed my perspective on storytelling overall, right, for sure.
Well, I'm happy about that. I want people to hear that too. You know, telling a story isn't that easy. It's really two major components. You've got to be able to organize it so it makes sense to a bunch of pedestrians, and you have to deliver it in order to make it engaging. And those two things are really pretty complicated, but you do them both really well in your story. I think everyone will agree that bravery is the anchor which supports your incredible story, Ana. Share it with us.
All right. So every time that I've told this story to the FBI, to the police, to my friends, to my family, I always tell them the cold, hard facts. My best friend and I were kidnapped and held hostage and had our bank accounts drained. But I never mention the moment that saved us. It all happened kind of fast. My best friend and I had gone out to eat after we both got off work. And afterwards, we decided to stand outside our cars. After all, the moon was out, there was a nice breeze, and we had even seen a woman walking with her dog, so we felt pretty safe. And as we were conversating, out of the corner of my eye, I see a car zoom by and come to a complete stop. And immediately this man gets out of the car and he starts yelling at us. Give me your wallets and phones and drop everything else and don't try any funny business or I'll blow your heads off. Diani and I looked at each other and we knew it was serious. So we did exactly as we were told. As he was looking through our wallets, he realized that we didn't have any kind of cash. And at that exact moment that he realized it, another man came out of the car and they talked amongst themselves for a second and then they turned to us. I don't care how long it's going to take. I don't care what it's going to take. We're going to take y'all with us and we're going to get our money one way or another. And the next thing I knew, we were both being dragged into the car. The moment that we heard those doors shut behind us, we knew that we were about to experience hell. That night, we drove all around Houston trying to find ways to drain our bank accounts. I had never felt so angry and outraged and scared and hopeless. And thinking back at it, it was a little things that had started to break me. Having to ask, can I please go to the bathroom? May I please have a glass of water? their disgusting sexual comments, their comments about how scared we looked, having to stay awake after a 10-hour shift because of fear of what would happen if we dared close our eyes was too great. And the yelling, it was so loud and so full of rage that these are some of the sounds that still accompany my nightmares to this day. I tried so hard to be resilient for my friend, but finally at 7 a.m., I cracked. At 7 a.m., we were in a car and we were stuck in traffic. As I looked around, I began to ask myself, can no one see what's going on? Can no one look inside and see how scared we looked? I mean, come on, it's so obvious in our faces. Does no one know what's going on? I started to panic and I began to tremble. And with every breath I took, I felt like I was being suffocated. And through those labored breaths, I heard something. Just waking up in the morning, gotta thank God. I don't know, but today seems kind of odd. I felt something warm and I looked down and saw that Diani was holding my hand. We looked at each other and we took a deep breath. I understood. Once again, I found myself looking out the window, and although I felt trapped and helpless and knew that the situation wasn't over with, deep in my heart, I knew that everything was going to be okay. After all, today was a good day.
Ending that story with "today is a good day" is one of the most poignant endings I've ever heard, because you told that story so deliberately, and as that story unfolded, you're breathing. I mean, naturally, you don't even work at this. It just grows harder and more labored. You can't help that. It's a hard question to answer, Anahi, but as you tell this story again, what is going on in your mind as you're unpacking this story, as you're going through it again?
I just felt throughout the story, I relived my experience. I relived how scared I was, but I also relived the small amount of hope that I felt the moment that I heard that song.
Right. You know, it's a little bit of a change up with the other follow-up questions that I've asked the other tellers, but at what point did you give yourself permission to tell the story? You know, Avante mentioned earlier, very eloquent point about ownership, right? Clearly you have to own the story, and you do. But when was it that you first said, I'm going to give myself permission to tell this story?
Yeah, so it's been around 9 months since that whole incident happened. And during those 9 months, no one had ever asked me if I wanted to tell the story. I kind of had to tell the story, but it wasn't.
Did they just assume you didn't want to, that you didn't want to talk about it, you think?
It was more like I had to tell my story just because, like, for authority purposes, to help, you know, like investigations and whatnot. But it wasn't until I was in this storytelling class and we talked about, you know, having to give ourselves permission, that I asked myself, is this something that I would want to share? And I had to think about it for a long time. And my final thought was, by telling a story, I am able to let go of those feelings that I felt. And
you, has it helped?
It definitely has. It definitely has, for sure.
Well, we're happy about that. You know, there's a reason why many therapists use storytelling in their own treatment, but that's not the goal of this program. I want our listeners to know that wasn't the goal, but it's certainly a great secondary variable that can happen. And if that's the outcome, that's great. So you thought that you trusted yourself to tell this story and that we would all accept it. We would all want to listen to it. And it was important for you to somehow convey it. Yeah. Leo, what do you think about the story? I know you've heard it before. What are your impressions of Anais's story and the kind of, well, the kind of determination it took for her to deliver it?
I absolutely love Anais's story. The way that she tells it, I feel like I was in the car with her. Yeah. And like, I could feel my heart beating so fast. Like when she was doing those breaths, I was like, oh my gosh. It like felt so real. And it's such an amazing story about resilience and bravery. Yeah. And you I really commend her.
You really do feel that. Yeah. Blake, what do you think?
Absolutely.
I feel the same, honestly. Like, I even still now, like, I still feel my heart pumping a little bit on that. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't imagine going through what you went through and just, you know, just having the resilience to get out of that, tell your story, and be able to come now to tell your story about that, you know, for sure.
Yeah. Remarkable, really. Just really remarkable. You know, my takeaway from this show, from the stories that I've heard from each of you, is that there are times that we want to tell a story about an occurrence because it impacted us, surprised us, somehow inspired us to tell it to our friends. You know, dates, jaunts in the neighborhood, playing with a dog, getting your favorite candy in that trick-or-treat bag, an F on an exam, summer school, concerts, your first breakup, you know, those kind of things. And so we craft a story so we can tell our friends. And there are other times that we tell a story about an incident and learn a lesson oftentimes that's hidden in that story that surfaces because of the way we tell it or by the responses we get from those listening to it. So for example, we learn things from the stories that you tell. And my guess is that when you tell a story, like Anais, when you tell your story, for example, you may learn different things based on the responses you get from us. Or Blake, when you tell the story about football, you get new insights from the feedback that we provide to you. And that's why that storyteller, story listener connection is so pronounced and so very important. Now, each of you have done that first, but you've achieved that second one when you told them in class, and I go through it again, because this is sort of an aha moment when you tell these stories and we learn from them again. There's lots of examples, but let me convey a couple of stories that I told recently. I won't tell the entire story, but sort of a summarized version of these two stories that I told. And I swear to God, I didn't learn from these stories until I had a chance to tell them. Now, I've told both of these stories some time ago, but whenever I tell them, I learn something new. Now, when I first told these stories, they were just incidents. It was sort of like telling my friends, you wouldn't believe what happened today. This is what happened. So I was simply telling about the event. And then I watched them. I watched these people and I listened to the folks who were listening to my stories. And they said, things like, wow, that's sort of like this, or that reminds me of that. Or that reminds me of something really profound that got me thinking, maybe my story was more than just a report of an incident. So for example, I always tell this story to kids, but it's a story about Johnny the parakeet. When I was 6 years old, you know, my family hated animals. They didn't want any animals in the house, and I was always an animal lover, right? It's not so much that they hated animals, but we lived in an urban area and, you know, it really wasn't a safe place for a lot of animals to run around because there were cars around and there were whatever. And my grandmother comes home one day with a box with holes in it and it's a parakeet. So imagine how thrilled I was. I'm 6 years old and there's an animal in the house. I named the parakeet Johnny. Why? I don't know. It was probably the first name that came to mind. So this little blue parakeet, a beautiful little blue parakeet, was in a cage. And my grandmother wouldn't let this parakeet out of the cage. This parakeet had to live in the cage. And I said, Grammy, I called her Grammy, this parakeet has got to get out of the cage. For God's sakes, this parakeet can't be in the cage. No birds live in cages. I'm thinking, really? Now I'm 6 years old, so I'm kind of believing her, but I'm thinking, I don't think so. I see birds outside. I see him on TV. They're supposed to fly around, you know? So she's feeding the bird. in the cage, not letting them out, cleaning the cage, not letting them out. And then one day I stuck my finger in the cage and this thing went wild. It was like, you know, Cujo, remember the story Cujo, Stephen King, the wild dog? It was like a mini Cujo in a cage. All of a sudden he started to bite me. This attack parakeet came after me. And I thought, my God, I know why this parakeet is angry. I opened the door, I let the parakeet out, flew around, right? And then it came and sat on my shoulder, put him on my finger. I played with it a little bit, put it back in the cage, and he never bit me again. Now that's just an occurrence. But you know, what I've learned is something that you're probably thinking about right now. Nobody wants to be encaged, do they? When you're in a cage, you don't like it. And you're going to reply. You're going to respond to it. Now, that's kind of a synthesized version, but you get the idea, right? And, but I didn't think about that. I didn't think about what I learned until I actually told it. But there was another story that occurred not too long ago. I was in a hospital emergency room, and there was an amalgamation of people. There was Memorial Hermann, and there was an amalgamation of people. Old, young, rich, poor, you know what it's like in an emergency room if you've ever been there, just a bunch of people sitting around. And every color of skin, language, seemingly these people had nothing in common other than them being in a waiting room, in an emergency room, waiting for someone they love. Now I was close enough in this circle of visitors where I could see everything and hear most everything. And after a few minutes, I noticed an elderly African-American gentleman turn to an Asian woman and ask, have you heard anything about your husband? And she responded and then asked him about his wife. And then a few moments later, a young man, Hispanic man, about 25 to 30 years old, asked a middle-aged woman, very elegantly dressed as if she was at a banquet or a special event, how she was doing, if she wanted any coffee. She shrugged, kind of despondent, but she really seemed worried. And he saw that, and he brought her a cup of coffee anyway. She smiled, started talking, and explained that her husband had severe chest pain while they were at a fundraiser. There was a woman, maybe, I don't know, maybe Pakistani or Indian, began talking to a small child, a little girl about 5 years old, who was really worried because her grandmother was crying. And I noticed this and I saw this. And it was a beautiful sight, really, despite the fact that it was in an emergency room. And what I saw is really pretty obvious. What I saw was the fact that these individuals have so much more in common than they have differences, right? It was being in that emergency room that brought them all together. Differences are blessings rather than constraints. Now, I never came up with that conclusion or that learning theme when I first told that story years ago. Not at all. It happened 4 years ago. And I never really thought about that. It was just, again, a report of what happened. I was simply telling my wife, this is what happened. This is what I saw. And she's the one who said, wow, it just shows you how much we have in common. Now, that doesn't sound very provocative, very profound, but it was. It tells you how we are human beings, doesn't it? Just by standing in an emergency room, watching people, listening to them. But you know, most of us in the world don't take time to listen or to pay attention, right? We don't watch. We don't have our ears open. We're too busy thinking about something else. And I think that this is really the time of year with Christmas, Hanukkah just passing, the new year upon us, where we have to think about spending time listening to each other, wanting to be with each other. No one enters an experience with the intention of learning something. However, behaviorists have always contended that learning is the precise reason we carve a story from an experience. So all of you tonight, when you told a story, when you crafted a story from your experience, you demonstrated what it means to learn something from those experiences. Blake, let me ask you something. Who was the storyteller in your house growing up? Did you have one? Is there a storyteller in your home growing up?
Crazy enough, me.
You?
Yeah.
You were? Okay, so there wasn't really anybody in your home that told stories all that often?
Maybe my grandmother before she passed, but
yeah,
she after did. That, it was, yeah, me for sure.
Yeah. Leah, anybody in your home growing up who was a story?
Absolutely. My dad, 100%. I remember me and my brother begging my dad to tell us stories from when he was a kid, and he was so animated, and they were hilarious stories. So, yeah,
beautiful.
My dad was
the storyteller. All right. Anahi, what about you? Same story, same question. Anybody growing up? Right.
Yeah, just like Leah said, my dad, love his stories to this day.
Right. Still telling stories, huh? Still? Right. Monte, how about you?
Most definitely. My mother and my great aunt. They grew up in Louisiana and different parts of the country, and they told me all about their childhood and everything like that. So.
Right. And what did that teach you about about family? Anything?
In general, it taught me that resilience really does pay off. You know, they came from not so great, you know, places, and they really have changed their lives around. So,
yeah, beautiful. Thank you, Anahi Osorio, Debbie Silverman, Leah Alonzo, Avante Lewis, and Blake McAdoo for your warmth and revelations in your stories, and for braving the elements to be on this show. Eric Hain will be at the helm next week, but don't you dare move, because Charles Hightower's R&B Gold is up next with a cool mix of soul. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. And while you're driving home or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? You keep loving great stories, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. Merry Christmas and a peaceful new year. The greatest gift of all is kindness. This is Hank Rubicek, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if the story doesn't end the way you want it, it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Time to holler down the pipe chase and rattle them bars.
The Prison Show airs Fridays 9 to 11 p.m. at 90.1 FM KPFT. For over 40 years, each two-hour program uses an hour to discuss issues and organizations of importance to prisoners and their families to help educate and inform our listeners. The second hour broadcasts shout-outs, live calls from inmates' family and friends so inmates can hear their loved ones speaking on the air. For over 40 years, the show has connected Texas prison inmates with their friends and loved ones over the airwaves. You can't find an older Texas show, and it's right here on KPFT every Friday, 9 to 11 p.m. at 90.1 FM KPFT or online at kpft.org, Houston's community station.
Pacifico Radio is doing what it does best.
And the rich white companies are jumping the line so they can get access to the vaccine.
Covering the global pandemic.
I think people need to wake up and recognize that this is a fight against slavery.
The working class movement against racism and imperialism.
If we have a First Amendment, it needs to extend from government to how these big tech companies are basically run by proxy in the public sphere.
And holding politicians and corporate media accountable to the people. This and much more on COVID, race, and democracy. Tuesdays at 8 a.m. on KPFT.
You're listening